If you want, you can go ahead and place your markers to 1 Peter 4, and we'll be getting there in a little bit. But to kind of get us going in our lesson, we're going to be talking about five reasons to be faithful. And Peter, in 1 Peter 4, verse 1 through 6, he gives us five instances, or I saw five instances of why we should be faithful. However, we have to realize that in life we have decisions to make. We have choices. And in those decisions and choices, we need to understand that they matter. Going through life haphazardly, not really considering whether or not it's going to have an effect on us, whether it be spiritually, maybe it has a physical effect on us that could in turn cause us to suffer spiritually, or maybe other people. Our choices may affect other people. However, if you look at, let's go back to Matthew chapter 4. We're going to follow these examples here to kind of get us to see exactly what I'm talking about. We may not read every passage here, but I do want us to look at these examples, these these instances here in regards to serving. Who are we serving? Here in this instance, in Matthew chapter 4, we have the tempter, we have Satan, essentially, coming to Jesus, and he's tempting him. This is, of course, after he had been fasting for 40 days and 40 nights. So he was hungry. And you see there in verse 3, and the tempter came and said to him, "If you are the Son of God, command that these stones become bread." And we see the response. "It is written, man shall not live on bread alone, but on every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." And we see this constantly going on. It progressively gets worse, and it gets down to the point where verse 8, "Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their glory. And he said to him, all these things I will give you if you fall down and worship me." Now, obviously, we understand and respect that this is an instance of Jesus being tempted, right? However, if this was us in this instance, what would our response be? Because look around, right? The world's great. We got nice cars, we got good clothes, we eat good food, we drink clean water, we get to take baths every day, or we should take baths every day, right? You know, we just have a tremendous amount of blessings. And for some, they're content with this world. They're content to live here for forever and not really consider the afterlife. They don't think that far ahead. "All of this I will give you if you will bow down and worship me." And let's look at Jesus' response. Jesus said to him, "Go, Satan, for it is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." So in our lives, God or Satan. Yeah, the world's great. Pleasures galore. But also, there's another P word. There's pleasures galore, and then there's problems galore. Go over to chapter 6. Chapter 6 and verse 24. No one can serve two masters. For either he will hate the one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and wealth. Or as King James says, mammon. or more modern word would be money. And I'm not going to go through all the different examples I could tell you this morning, but you can just turn on the televangelist and you just pick your poison, right? There's tons of them on there. Are they worshiping God or are they worshiping money? You be the judge. Go to Matthew 7. It may even be on the same page like it is for me. The narrow way or the broad way? This is why, this is the passage as to why I believe it's important for us to remain faithful. And Peter's going to get, we'll get to what Peter says in just a moment. But this is the passage, Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. This is why it is important for us to be faithful to God. Enter through the narrow gate, for the gate is wide and the way is broad that leads to destruction, and there are many who enter through it. I don't think this passage resonates enough for people or with people. They don't believe that. They don't take that seriously. There are many who enter through it. Because too many people, far too often, are just too comfortable with this idea of just going along with the majority. Because, hey, everybody else is doing it. You know, I remember trying that with my parents. But Mom, the kid across the street's doing it. The kid down the road's doing it. Everybody's doing it. And she looked me dead in the face and says, I ain't their mama. I'm your mama. You're going to listen to me. You're going to do what I tell you to do. It didn't matter if every other kid in the school district was doing it. If my parents told me I couldn't do it, tough. And I understand that now. I get it. But we've got grown adults who don't get it. They just think that, well, God's just... And I don't know what passage they pull it from. I guess it's 1 Opinions chapter 1, verse 1. I don't know where they pull it from. But they just think that God's just going to overlook their sin, that he's just going to ignore all of their sin and all of their iniquity. He's not going to hold them accountable. He's not going to punish a soul. He's going to let everyone live and let live, and that he'll just bless everybody for all eternity. But now you show me one passage that ever says that, and then I'll go along with it. But then we see, for the gate is small, and the way is narrow that leads to life, and there are few who find it. It's sad. It's unfortunate. But this is showing us a reality that more often than not, people are not willing to humble themselves. They are not willing to show humility. They are not willing to be humble, to basically exalt everyone else around them, exalt God, because it's about themselves. You only live once. So I'm going to get mine, and just everybody else, we're just going to run them over. I'm going to do what I want to do, and God's just going to have to be on the back burner. But this is what I see. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 4. First Peter chapter 4. Point number one of why we should be faithful in our lives. For one, it's because we want to be on the straight and narrow path. That's number one, right? Really and truly. But no, really. In this text, we see verse 1 and 2. Therefore, since Christ has suffered in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, so as to live the rest of the time in the flesh no longer for the lusts of men, but for the will of God. So we see here that there's a standard. There's a standard of practice, if you will. Because Christ has suffered, because Jesus died for you, what should you do? Peter says to arm yourselves also with the same purpose. What are we supposed to die to? Sin. We're supposed to die to sin. Arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Now, this is going to be important because you need to keep this passage in your mind as we continue on here in chapter 4. And you'll see as we go verse by verse through verse 6, you'll see it. He who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Typically, those who are suffering in the flesh, those who carry around grief from the world, those who are harassed and ridiculed for living righteously, for living a godly and wholesome life, are those who have ceased from sin. Those who have stopped sinning in their lives. Let's go over to Romans chapter 5. And just keep your mark. Let me put my marker here. Let's go over to Romans chapter 5. To kind of further this point that Jesus died for us. Romans chapter 5, verse 6 through 9, we read Paul saying to these Roman Christians, he says, "For while we were still helpless, at the right time Christ died for the ungodly. However, he did not die for the ungodly to remain ungodly. For one will hardly die for a righteous man, though perhaps for the good man someone would dare even to die. But God demonstrates his own love toward us in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. Much more then, having now been justified by his blood, we shall be saved from the wrath of God through him." And then everybody knows the passage in John 3:16. "For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish but have eternal life." The life that we're talking about is not life here in the flesh. It's life in the presence of God in heaven. The place that we desire and hope for and wish to be for all eternity. Go back to 1 Peter 4. Number 2, we're going to go through these points pretty quickly since I have 5. So we've read verse 1 and 2. Let's look at verse 3. "For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles, having pursued a course of sensuality, lust and drunkenness and carousing and drinking parties and abominable idolatries." What Peter's saying is it's time to grow up. You've had enough time to sin, but now you must put those things away. "For the time already past is sufficient for you to have carried out the desire of the Gentiles." You had enough time to spend in your sin. But now in Christ, you must put those things away. If you go over to Colossians chapter 3, Colossians chapter 3, we see there in verse 5, Paul says, therefore consider the member of your earthly body as dead to immorality and impurity and passion and evil desire and greed, which amounts to idolatry. Consider these members dead. Put to death, therefore. For it is because of these things that the wrath of God will come upon the sons of disobedience. And in them you also once walked when you were living in them. But see, Peter's saying, grow up. It's time to change. It's time for you to put these childish things away. It's time for you to act like a man. It's time to behave as an adult. It's time for you to live a Christian life. That's what Peter's saying. Let's go back to Romans chapter 8. Romans chapter 8. Verse 12 through 14. Paul says, so then, brethren, we are under obligation. Look at that. Obligation, obligated. Okay? We are under obligation not to the flesh, to live according to the flesh. For if you are living according to the flesh, you must die. He's not saying that you necessarily deserve to die a physical death. What does your soul? What about your soul? We know, for the wages of sin is death. For you must die. But if by the Spirit you are putting to death the deeds of the body, you will live. So living a spiritual life puts to death the deeds of the body. It puts to death sin that reigns in your life. You will live. Spiritually. You'll be spiritually made alive by living in the Spirit. For all who are being led by the Spirit of God, these are the sons of God. However, if you are living by the standard of the flesh, you cannot call yourself a son of God. If you actually continue on, he says, for you have not received a spirit of slavery leading to fear, but you have received a spirit of adoption as sons by which we cry out, Abba, Father. Because we know we need His presence with us each and every day. We long to be with Him. We desire to be with God. And so we must rely upon Him in our faith. For Him. For He who has the power to forgive sins, and He alone. It's time to grow up. It's time to move on. Let's go back to 1 Peter 4. And look here at verse 4. In all this, they are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation, and they malign you. Remember what we said earlier in verse 1. Arm yourselves also with the same purpose, because he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin. Look at this verse. They are surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses of dissipation. Why aren't you partying with us? Hey, guy, why didn't you come out and hang out with us? Come on, man, it's just one drink. It's not going to hurt you. I mean, I've heard it all. And these kinds of people, they don't like it when you say no, right? And this is also coming from the same community who they go around preaching, no means no. Now, I'm not trying to belittle rape, sexual immorality, or anything like that. sexual assault. I take that stuff very, very seriously. However, what is it that we preach about in regards to hypocrisy? Don't be a hypocrite. Don't sit here and preach at me, say no means no, and then turn around and when I say no to your sinful activity, you turn it around on me and attack me. That's exactly what they're saying. They are surprised that you do not run with them. Into the same excesses of dissipation. The world doesn't like it when you hold them accountable. They don't like it when you tell them no and that you act and behave and live differently than they do. They want to beat you down. They want to attack you. They want to attack everything that you stand for, which is God. Because our godly living will convict them of their sinfulness. And due to that, they will speak evil of us. They will attack us. They will falsely accuse us. And yet, but Mom, so-and-so's doing it. God doesn't care if everybody else is doing it because it's time to grow up. Go back to Matthew chapter 5. Go back to Matthew chapter 5. Start at verse 13. You are the salt of the earth, but if the salt has become tasteless, how can it be made salty again? It's no longer good for anything except to be thrown out and trampled upon underfoot by men. But you are the light of the world. A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor does anyone light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light shine before men in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. And that, folks, is the other side of the coin. You let your light shine before others, and you let them decide to make the choice of whether or not they're going to insult you and ridicule you for living in such a way, or that they make the choice that I'm going to glorify God. You let them make that choice, but don't take that choice away from them by not being a light. We take that choice away from them. And then we're not living in faith. Our influence matters. Here's a big one. Because of judgment. Verse 5 here in 1 Peter 4. Verse 5. But they will give an account to him who is ready to judge the living and the dead. As Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5:10, we must all appear before the judgment seat of Christ. All of us. Every last one of us. There's not any exemptions. There's no exceptions to the rule. So that each one may be recompensed for his deeds in the body according to what he has done, whether good or bad. So if there's something in your life that you are really struggling with, that you're having a hard time processing, know this. No matter how hard it is, no matter how difficult of a task it is, no matter how difficult your life is, God knows about it, He understands, and He cares. But if you don't come to Him You will stand in judgment. And he will judge you. Go over to Hebrews chapter 10. And the Hebrew writer here is saying something similar. Verse 26. If we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins. It's a powerful verse. If we go on sinning willfully after receiving the knowledge of the truth, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sins. Because we're essentially crucifying Jesus all over again. And his first crucifixion wasn't enough. Each and every time. But a terrifying expectation of judgment, the fury of a fire which will consume the adversaries, those who stand against godliness, those who stand against the gospel. Anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy on the testimony of two or three witnesses. And how much severe punishment do you think he will deserve who has trampled under the foot the Son of God and has regarded as unclean the blood of the covenant by which he was sanctified and has insulted the Spirit of grace? For we know him who said, "Vengeance is mine, I will repay," and again, "The Lord will judge his people." It is a terrifying thing to fall into the hands of the living God. Just as I said earlier about Matthew 7, 13 and 14 and how people don't take that verse seriously, they don't take what the Hebrew writer says seriously. They believe that God is just this big giant teddy bear up in the sky and that he's just buddy buddies with everybody. And that is not God. That's a God little g that they've made. That's their idol. But that's not God. We see time and time again, judgment is coming. Are you ready? And then finally, because the gospel's being preached, let's go to verse 6 in 1 Peter 4. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead. For what purpose do you suppose? Judgment. That's the purpose. For the gospel has for this purpose been preached even to those who are dead, that though they are judged in the flesh as men, they may live in the Spirit according to what? The will of God. But if we live by the standards of society in the world, we stand condemned. That's the reality. However, remember back in verse 4, they're surprised that you do not run with them into the same excesses and dissipation. That's the peer pressure. That's people coming to you, attacking you, and just taking off bit by bit and piece by piece. Or think of it as like you've built a protective shell around you and people just keep battering you with like a battering ram and eventually they crack through the shell and eventually the shell breaks. And the reason why is because you did not stand in faith. We must remain faithful. When we are living alive to God, it shows that we are suffering with Christ and it shows that we have resisted sin. Three times Jesus responded back in Matthew 4, he said, "It is written, man shall not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God." He says, "It is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." And then he said, "It is written, you shall worship the Lord your God and serve him only." It's easy. It's simple. But do you believe it? Do you accept that? So we see that Peter gives us five simple reasons, or purposes, if you will, to serve God. If you look at Mark 6, I'm just going to read these two verses here. Verse 36 and 38, and then the lesson will be yours. What does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? How will it profit anyone to succumb to the peer pressure of the world and to partake of its evil deeds, to partake of its wickedness, to sin against God? How does that profit you? It doesn't. We know that. For whoever is ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, the Son of Man will also be ashamed of him when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Are you ready? I said it this morning, I'll say it again. Lord, come quickly. He can't come quick enough. I know there's many in here that's tired, that's weary and heavy laden. And Jesus tells you to come to me. All ye that labor and are heavy laden, I will give you rest. But if you're here this morning and you recognize that you are in sin and you have not confessed Jesus as the Christ, the Son of God, but you believe in Him, you believe that He is the Son of God, you believe in His resurrection, and you're willing to confess Him, repent of your sins, and be baptized in the watery grave of baptism to be raised to walk in newness of life, we want to help you in that endeavor. We want to help you start your journey in making heaven your home. But maybe you were here, you've done that. Maybe it was 20, 30, 40 years ago. And you realize you need a fresh start. There's no judgments here. God's the judge. No judgments here. We'll pray for you. We'll pray with you. We'll study with you. We want to get you back on track. If you need to be reconciled back to God in any way, whether it's putting on in baptism or asking the prayers from the congregation, if you're here and you're subject to our public invitation,